So again, paid Dalet and Aleph. We're trying to work on the question. Rav Akiva Eiger asks a question on Rashi. Okay, so the Gemara is trying to show that you don't have a problem of Mishpat Echad, of having a uniform system of Mishpat, in a situation where if you can't apply Mishpat because of somebody's Pater Legamre. Okay, so the case the Gemara is trying to show is the person who's blind. The person who's blind knocks out somebody's eye, so then you don't knock out his eye, and that's not a problem of Mishpat. Because of Mishpat Echad, even though sometimes you knock out a person's eye and sometimes you don't, in retribution, because it's just Yefshar, it's an impossibility. And Mishpat Echad is only violated if you apply two different verdicts. But if you simply can't apply a uniform verdict, you don't say that's a lack of Mishpat Echad. Okay. Let's see, we got the, there you go. I don't know. Okay. So then the Gemara tries to bring a raya from the case of a treifa, if a treifa kills somebody. So if a treifa kills somebody, so he's pater. And Rashi explains the reason why is because the Edim who are testifying that the treifa killed somebody, it's Edish yet yachal azimo. Because even if the Edim who are saying that Reuben the treifa killed Shimon, so then he still wouldn't be, those Edim, if they were really lying and we knew Imanu Ayisa and they're really somewhere else, they still wouldn't be killed because they're just trying to kill a treifa. And you're not chayiv misa for trying to kill a treifa. So therefore, it comes out that these Edim, they really have no skin in the game. They're not really, the neck's not on the line, and they can't, they wouldn't get killed even if they were liars. And therefore, it's Edus yet yachalazima, which is not Edus. And you're not going to kill the treifa based upon their Edus, because their Edus is no good, because Edus yet yachalazima, where we don't trust those Edim. That's the simplest job. Okay. And then Rabbi Kiva asked a question. He says, if that's really the case, that it's Edish Yet Yachal Azimah, and that's why you don't kill a treifa, because the Edim are no good, because they have nothing, no risks, nothing on the line. So he's saying, so then it just comes out basically, you don't really eat this. So how do you even really know that the treifa killed, that Reuben killed Shimon? How do you know the Edim? Well, the Edim is no good. It's psilidus, right? It's Edish yet yachalazimah. It's not a good Edis. So if that's the case, you don't really know that Reuven killed Shimon. So of course you don't kill Reuven because you don't know that it happened. But that's not a. It doesn't prove that when I know something happened, like I know Reuven knocked out Shimon's eye. Now, if Reuven is blind and I say, look, I can't knock out Reuven's eye, so that's a problem of Mishpat Echad. Maybe you argue that's a problem of Mishpat Echad because you're pottering him legamri. Right? So how do you really prove in the case of the treifa? The treifa case, we don't know whether it happened. But by the chovo case, we would know what happened. We just can't do it anymore. So that should present the problem. Okay, so that's Rabbi Kiva's question on Rashi. It's just, there's no Eidus anymore. If there's no Eidus, then what kind of thing is? And he loses his tzarachim. Okay. So we'd like to try to explain the machlokes, defend Rashi, and explain the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva Eiger and, in theory, how we could try to answer the question for Rashi. Okay. So the first step is we'll try to change the premise, right? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger is his question is based upon a very reasonable idea that the reason why you need Eidus, that's Yachal Azimo, is because I don't trust Edim unless there's consequences of that if they're lying, right? That just like we said, like the Drishas and Chakiros, they have to corroborate. You don't just trust necessarily one aid. He might lie, or he isn't the same. I don't want to get to one aid, but there's different methods of corroborating witnesses in order to make sure that they're telling the truth. So too, the fact that there's consequences to the Edim if they're lying, and they'll be punished. So that makes you believe the Edim. But if I don't have that credibility check, if I don't have those consequences, so then how do I know these Edim aren't just lying? Right? Meaning essentially, I don't really just trust two Edim. And I need the fact that there's consequences for them if they lie in order to know that they're really telling me the truth. And hence, this question really becomes very strong that according to Rashi, it's Edish Yet Yachal Azimo. So I don't really have trustworthy edus that I don't really have trustworthy edus that Reuven killed Shimon. In which case, the whole Gemara doesn't really make any sense. It doesn't really work, right? Okay, but the shift is to say that no, that really, really the Edim are Neman. We really trust them, okay? But there's a separate Xeris HaKosov that you won't kill Reuven, you won't act, you won't, Beis Din will not implement the Din based upon Edus Yata Yachal Azimo. An Edus that can't be without the Hazama possibility, potential. So Beis Din will not implement the Din based upon that Edus, even though we trust the Edim. And we know we're telling the truth, that they're telling the truth. And we know that Reuven killed Shimon. Nevertheless, since it's Edus Yata Yachal Azimo, there's a Xeris HaKosov not to implement the Din based upon that. Okay, as opposed to Rikiv Eger is assuming that that there's no Nemanus. The Edus itself is not trustworthy. And therefore, of course, I don't implement the Din. I'm not even aware of the fact. Here I'm aware of it, I just can't act. I won't do something based upon the Edus. Okay. That's what Yaakov's proposing, you know, based upon the Ram we'll bring in later, but that's the first step. Okay. So let's see, does that step make sense to everybody? Does that work?
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's essentially the difference that we're trying to say. Rikiv Eger is saying there is no Edus because the Edus is gone. There is no Edus. It doesn't have a din of Edus because it's Yati Yachal Azimo. And we're saying that, no, it must be, according to Rashi here, that this Gemara, or the way Rashi learns the Gemara, that that it is Edus Nemanus. We trust them. We believe them. It's good Edus. It's just, nevertheless, there's Xeris HaKosov because it lacks the quality of Yachal Hazimo, that it's capable of being Huzam and the Edim having consequences if they're lying. Therefore, we're not going to implement anything. We're not going to act based upon that Edus. Right. Correct. Now, it has to be explained, right? It's like, I want to do one step of methodology first to discuss Xeris HaKosovs. I just thought this would be a good opportunity, but I mean, yes, ultimately you want to explain, understand it. But that's what I'm saying. That's the first halachic move we're trying to make. Is there's a difference between basically a psul in the edus, which destroys the edus, makes the edus like it's not there, where it's worthless. If you don't trust them, then you don't really know. The testimony has no validity to it. Versus saying, I have the Edus, I believe the Edus, but nevertheless, I can't act upon it. There's a Xeris HaKosov. Don't kill somebody based upon this. Don't take money based upon this. Don't knock out an eye based on this, whatever it is. Xeris HaKosov is not to implement a din based upon Edus Shiyata Yachal Azimo. That's different than saying the Edus itself is no good. Right.
So when they have Gemaras, like the Gemara the Rashi brings down, So it really is Edus, it's just not the impact of the Edus? Is that what Loshma Edus means?
Yeah, I mean, it's not beautiful, that Lashon.
That's Sanhedrin. I mean, I don't think he brings it, I just looked at it inside.
Right, that's not a beautiful Lashon. Lashon of Loshma Edus sounds like it's not even Edus, right, which would support Rikiv Eger. Correct. So I don't know. It's good, you know, the Lashon of Rashi over there. I guess you're going to have to twist it a little bit. Maybe when we give our answer, we'll be able to fit in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the simplest Shavlosh made this would be, and that's what I would have said before, you know, Rikiv Eger is a good Svara. Rikiv Svara is correct. I mean, it seems like it makes sense. He's giving you Tama Davar. Why should you require this Yad HaZimo? It should just be Alacha that if the Edom are Huzam, they are punished. And if it becomes impossible to get Edish Yad HaZimo, okay, fine, whatever. You know, who cares? What's the difference? So why should you require it? You know, but, and then you just say it doesn't have a din of Edus because you don't believe it. If it's right. Okay. So then you would say, Kiv Eger Svara is that if it's not Yachal Azimo, there's no credibility to the witnesses. And that's just a clear Svara. There's no Nemanus. I don't trust these witnesses and therefore I'm not going to act based upon them because I don't trust them. And that loshmeidus, that would be the simplest way to interpret it. It's not good edus because since there's no consequences, who knows that these people aren't lying? And that's one of the methods that Torah uses in order to create a check to verify that the Eidus is Yachal Azimo. Okay, so let's, as a first approach, let's say it in a more extreme manner, and then maybe at the end we'll think of a way to say it in a way that's less extreme. Okay, so the more extreme way is to say that Rashi is really holding the Eidus is good. It is good Eidus, and we know it. The Gzeiras HaKasav is you can't act upon it. Okay, as opposed to Rabbi Kiva Eger, he's learning the Gzeiras HaKasav Eidus Yet Yachal Azimo. He's learning that Gzeiras HaKasav is teaching you that the Eidus itself has no nemanus. It's not a, we don't trust, it's not a trustworthy Eidus. And it doesn't have a shame Eidus if it's the Yachal Azimo. Okay, and that's the question, is what exactly is the Gzeiras HaKasav, Eidus Yet Yachal Azimo, Lo Shmei Eidus? Is it saying that it really isn't even Eidus at all, like Rabbi Kiva Eger, and therefore what the whole Gemara doesn't make any sense? Or saying, no, it is Eidus, it's just you can't act upon it, you can't, Bezin can't use it to execute a din based upon that Eidus. Okay, it's good Eidus, there's nothing really wrong with it intrinsically, but Bezin can't use it. Okay, that's what our first approach. Again, we'd like to explain and understand it, and hopefully make it a little bit less extreme for the side of Rashi, bring it a little bit closer. But for now, let's see if we can work with that. Okay. One thing I wanted to say, just a methodology point, is the idea of Gzeiras HaKasav. Okay, so just use this as an opportunity for like a broader discussion a little bit. So we'll get to when we see that Rambam and you know that Gemara and Baba Basra Dov brought in Kufin and Testament Aleph, like Gzeiras HaMelech or Gzeiras HaKasav. So a lot of what you're doing when you're in learning, especially by Doraisas, is what you're trying to do is you're trying to figure out what the Gzeiras HaKasav is saying, okay? Not necessarily why it's saying it. You're going to see where I'm going to try to move on to like a little bit of a philosophical sense of why, just to make sense of Gzeiras HaKasav. But there's really two things. The primary thing is you're trying to give a definition, like what is Gzeiras HaKasav doing, okay? And for example here is there is Gzeiras HaKasav, Eidus Yet Yachal Azimo is not Eidus. And the question is, what is the Gzeiras HaKasav doing? Is it telling you that the Eidus itself doesn't exist, is worthless, has no nemanus, is not you know worthwhile, doesn't have a shame Eidus? Or is it saying it's Halacha and Beis Din? Essentially, it's telling you that even though it is good Eidus intrinsically, but Beis Din should not act based upon it. Okay. So what you're doing, you do very often, is you have Gzeiras HaKasav, you have a pasuk sometimes. Right, like we'll see, Petzah Tachas Potzah and Nefesh Tachas Nefesh, all these things, you know. And there's a Gzeiras HaKasav, a Reboy, whatever it is, it's teaching you something. And like very often, like what you have to do is, like the sugi revolves around what is the Gzeiras HaKasav itself teaching you? And like once you identify that, a lot of the sugi flows from that. There's like everything else becomes consequences of that Gzeiras HaKasav. Like that's in a sense that you have to look at the halachic system as a comprised of like two parts. There's the Gzeiras HaKasav part, like what the Torah teaches you, and then you like build, Torah Shebaal Peh builds a halachic structure around those Gzeiras HaKasavs. Okay, so not everything is Gzeiras HaKasav, but it creates the like critical points, critical ideas that ground the system. And then the Torah Shebaal Peh, it grows around that, grows around those points. And you have to develop it and make things consistent and fill it out and deal with other cases that aren't specifically addressed by the Gzeiras HaKasav or resolve multiple Gzeiras HaKasavs or extend it to other areas, things like that. But a big challenge of learning and something that you're like always striving to do is to identify what is the Gzeiras HaKasav. You know what I mean? Like, what I mean is, first of all, identify what is the Gzeiras HaKasav that are relevant in the sugya you're doing, and the same what, but defining exactly how the Gemara is understanding what the Gzeiras HaKasav is doing. Okay, so for example, here we have Gzeiras HaKasav Eidus Yet Yachal Azimo. I'm unaware. I don't know where the pasuk you derive it from, but there's some Gzeiras HaKasav like that about how you know Eidus must have that quality. But then, you know, now you once you have that piece of information, you could see the question is so what is it telling you? How is it knocking out the Eidus? And then you could have two different ways of defining, understanding what the Gzeiras HaKasav is doing. Either telling Eidos is no value whatsoever, or it's telling Beis Din, even though Eidos in theory is good, don't act upon it, don't execute a din based upon it. Okay? So, and then there's, you know, once you have that, then there can be other, like, for example, then you have Arsugya, which derives as a consequence of that, how you look at the whole the Sugya of Trefa, things like that. So there's a lot of consequences once you define the Gzeiras HaKasav, but that's like a key focal point of a lot of learning. Okay? Okay. We'll see. As we go through this this year, well, you know, I think that's going to play out, basically always trying to figure out what the Gzeiras HaKasav is. Okay. So, okay. So let's take up that Rambam by the Krovim, right? Based on that Gemara and Bava Basra. And I'm going to try to use that idea, explaining it there, and try to use the idea to explain the Rashi over here. What's the sense behind Gzeiras HaKasav that even though it's good Eidos, right, if you see learn like Rabbi Akiva Eiger, the whole thing makes sense, is that it's not good Eidos. Essentially, it's not good. We don't believe it because it's not credible because there's no threat of consequences. And that's a necessary thing to have a credible Eidos. But if you say, like we're trying to say for Rashi, that really is credible, but nevertheless, this Gzeiras HaKasav not to act upon it, well, it sounds crazy. Why would the Torah say that this is credible witnesses and credible testimony, but you still can't act upon it, right? You know what I mean? It's like you'd like to make sense of Gzeiras HaKasav, okay? And that's really where you get to the, you know, the borderline between halacha and philosophy. And, you know, it's not always easy to know how far to go, but I think it's important to at least separate out the definition for Rashi that we're attempting to say, that it's Eidos that you can't act upon, and versus the concept behind it, okay? So we use that Rambam, and the Rambam, again, we'll try to show where it's not quite philosophy what we're doing, okay? I don't think so, because you see there's nafkaminas to it. Okay, so the Rambam is the last Rambam in Hilchos Eidos, Perek Yud Gimel. Okay, so Rambam's like this. He's trying to explain why did the Torah, right? Torah is different, 10 psuli Eidos, right? I think Rambam Perek Tes and Eidos brings up the 10 psuli Eidos, right? So, Katan, right? Avodim Nashim Kanim, whatever, Shota Chirish, Rasha, right? And Krovim is one of them. Okay, so he says, Zesh apostle Torah Eidos HaKrovim. So the reason the Torah apostled the testimony of relatives, Lo Mnei Shehin Cheskas Ovim Zetzeh. It's not because the Torah is really positing that there's a chazaka that they love each other, they're relatives and they love each other, and which creates a bias, and therefore I don't trust them. It's because if that were the case, that essentially all the Torah is telling you when it crow from our apostles is that there's a chazaka, they love each other. So then you wouldn't let them testify to the benefit of their karov, but you would let them testify to the detriment to their karov, because Kavachomer, if he loves him and he's still saying that he did something wrong, of course he's telling you the truth, right? Of course, you could say that the Torah is saying that Krovim either love each other or hate each other. You know, that's not a possibility, though. Okay, fine. So Ella Ram says Gzeiras HaKasav. It's Gzeiras HaKasav, right? Which sounds like it's saying there's no reason behind it. It's just Gzeiras HaKasav. Lefikach ha'oiveso ne'kasher leidos. The Torah is not telling you by Krovim. There's a cheskas that they owe him zed zed, and therefore you learn an oave or so innate our apostle Eidos, that if you have an emotional related bias towards somebody because you have a relationship with them, you know, then your apostle, then your Ram says you can't derive that because that's not why Karov is no good. Right? Afbishu apostle Dayanus by Dayanus and Hanami, that once you know Gebedavar in terms of the Dayanus, I shouldn't say no Gebedavar, that means something else. But once you have an emotional bias towards somebody, your apostle for it to be a Dayan, right? Shalom Gazer Torah, Ela Krovim. Because the Gzeiras HaKasav Eidos is limited to Krovim, not because there's a Cheskas Ovim, it's just simply Krovim are no good. And therefore, I don't accept their testimony. Okay, it's a psul edus. Okay, so it is a psul edus. It doesn't mean, Mansoul's will help us take the edge off of Rashi a little bit. But so what is the Rambam saying? Right, what's he saying? He's saying that that it's not that I say that it's sheker, that they're lying to us because that they really owe each other and therefore they're lying to us. Because if that's the case, then it would only go in one direction. Rather, the Xeris Kasa, the Edis of Krovim are possible. Okay. But then you're left with the question of what's the sense of that? Why would the Torah do something like that? If really the testimony of Krovim, I don't have that Chazaka. And the, in fact, an Oev and a Sone really is Kasher Edis. So then why is the testimony of Krovim no good? Right. I mean, the problem is on the one hand, you don't want to you want to understand the Gzeiras HaKasav, and the I'm saying the time of the Gzeiras HaKasav, or the way it's working. I should say time. The way it's working is not by creating a cheskas ohavim by krovim. The problem is, but just saying Gzeiras HaKasav, it makes the whole thing feel arbitrary. The Torah just created this arbitrary rule that krovim are possible. You know, when like it doesn't feel that Krovim is like an arbitrary rule, it seems like there is like a sense to the whole thing. And by just saying Zeres Akasa, it makes it feel like the Rambam's just saying, look, the whole thing's arbitrary, and therefore, and don't give me any svaras, the whole thing's just an arbitrary rule, Zeres Akasa, you can't ask any questions, there's no svar. But it becomes, you know, it becomes a little ridiculous. What's why the Torah do something like that? Right? So, you know, but on the other hand, isn't that what the Rambam's saying? That's just like an arbitrary rule. It's not based upon as far that they are Ovim Zedza. Okay. So I think that the way to think about it is that there's a difference between saying that the Gzeres HaKasav by Krovim is to say that they becheskes Ovim and we don't trust their Edus because they're biased towards it, because their relationship to each other, their relationship to the, I guess, who they're testifying against. And therefore, we don't trust them, and therefore, their edus intrinsically is not, there's no nam on us. Like a Rasha. You don't trust a Rasha because he's a liar, and therefore, his edus is no good. You don't trust him. To the Torah just saying, Krovim is not good edus. The Torah created a psul edus simply based on Krovim. Now, why did the Torah do it? Why would the Torah do something like that? So the reason is you have to think in terms of the system as a whole. Okay, sometimes the Torah creates a psul in something because if it were allowed across the board, then the institution of Edus as a system would break down. Okay, so at any particular time where Krovim come and they testify about each other, so then I would say, look, do I really not believe that guy that he's testifying about his relative and say he's lying, he's just doing that because he loves him and that's why he's doing that? No, I don't say that. That's not what's going on. Rather, the Torah postulated it because if we would allow Krovim to work in general, then you're going to end up with a corrupt system. Because Krovim are, they hate each other, they love each other. It's going to create a system, a systemic problem of Sheker. Not because of the Svara of Krovim, Ohavim Zadzeh, like that is obviously the reason that there's this emotional bias that Krovim have for each other, you know, one way or the other. And therefore, if we allowed it to work in general, then it's going to be on a system-wide basis. You can end up with a lot of Sheker and a lot of problems. So therefore, what the Torah did is it postulated Krovim. But that doesn't mean that any time Krovim come before us, we say, well, we don't trust them, that they're saying a lie, because Ohavim Zadzeh, it's not true. There's no intrinsic chazaka every single time that they were choshesh that they're lying. Any individual time they come before us, we're not really choshesh that they're lying just because they are ohavim zadzeh. It doesn't matter. And therefore, an ohavim esone, if a particular person has a, we know that they like somebody else, then they're still allowed to testify. You don't just say it because somebody has an emotional bias that therefore their testimony is not true. By dayanus, we say that will affect impede your ability to really judge the case accurately. But by Eidim, we don't say the emotional bias makes us question the cheskes kashrus that every Jew has and say that you're a liar. But that's in a particular case-by-case basis, we don't assume that. And therefore, an oev and a sone are really kasher. But on a system-wide basis, if we were to allow Krovim, then it would ultimately the system would break down and you would be introducing a lot of sheker into the system. Not because any particular case, but overall, it would end up being a bad system. Okay, and that's what the Rambam means. He means when these Krovim come and testify, and we throw them out and we say we're not going to listen to you. Your edus is possible. It's not because we're saying you're biased and therefore we don't trust you. No, you are biased, but we don't care. It doesn't matter. It's just the Gzeiras HaKasuv is we don't want Krovim in our system. In our system, the system doesn't allow Krovim. And overall, you're going to end up with a more just system and an honest system without Sheker because of the fact that you don't allow Krovim. But that's not to say that in this particular case, when these Krovim come, we don't trust them. And that the Cheskas Ovim is really what apostles them. Because then you'd really extend that to any time there's a Cheskas Ovim Zetzet. Okay, so that's the Rambam's point. There's a difference between what he means by Gzeiras HaKasuv means in this particular case is really nothing wrong with it whatsoever. It's just Gzeiras HaKasuv is we don't accept this type of Eidos. Okay, we don't accept this kind of Eidos. So it's a Psul Eidos. Right? That's the Rambam's point. It's not because of the Cheskas Ovim apostles it internally, but it's a systemic problem the Torah is preventing, so it creates a system-wide psul of Krovim. And why don't we accept Krovim? I mean, well, do we not believe them? We believe you. But as a system, this is the better system. This is the way the Torah set up the system. This system will lead to MS in a larger, in a broader way than if you allowed Krovim. Even though in this particular case, you're not going to be able to down the case, even though in theory you trust these Eidim and it would have worked out fine. So this particular case, you're not going to be able to execute Mishpat properly because even though the Eidim are good, in theory, they would be fine. But nevertheless, the Torah is trying to preserve a system of Eidus as a whole and therefore creates a psul of Krovim, even though in any particular case, there's nothing really wrong with them. So that's what Rambam means. He means that in particular, there's no psul because of Ovim Zadzat. But the Torah introduced a universal psul in Eidus because of broader perspective, but that doesn't halakhically all of that registers as Gzeiras HaKasuv of Psul Krovim. Okay, and the sense behind it is because the system as a whole would break down, but that's not what the Gzeiras HaKasuv is. That's the philosophical explanation that the Torah is motivated to produce a system that's going to work for thousands of years and that's not going to be broken down. And if we allowed it, what would be the consequences of allowing? That's like a philosophical explanation of understanding why the Torah would do something. But halakhically, it becomes Gzeiras HaKasuv. Krovim are pasul, and there's nothing deeper to that. You understand? Then that becomes the very psul itself, as opposed to the Havamina of the Rambam, where it's not a psul krovim per se, it's that krovim are cheskas ovim, and the bias makes it that the edus intrinsically is not believable. That's what the Rambam is rejecting, that the edus intrinsically becomes not good on its own, internally, because of the fact that the cheskas ovim. Kamash Volan, the Rambam saying, no, it's just simply a psul of Krovim itself, and there's nothing deeper halachically. Why did the Torah do that? To protect the system as a whole. Okay, but those are the two formulations.
All right, Zimmer.
Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
Aren't you really saying that there's a chashash of Avon Sina, that applies to every individual case? Because if that weren't so, if there's a 0% chance that a car was going to lie because of Avon Sina, you're not ever going to have a systemic problem where a sheker is being introduced.
Right. Well, you can answer that in two ways. One is, and I think this is the right answer, but, the right answer in this case, but you could answer it logically a different way. I think it's that, look, even if though there's a small chashash, so in any particular case, that's not sufficient. The cheskas kashrus of every Jew, and these are kashra edim in general, so that cheskas kashrus is enough for us. We'll discount that small chashash of the cheskas ovim that's generated from the emotional bias. But on a system wide, you do that over and over and over, you're going to end up with corruption. So sometimes, if it was a one-off case, I would say the cheskas kashrus outweighs the chashash of ovim. But because I know that if I do it over and over, I'm going to be introducing sheker into the system, therefore the Torah bans it because it's not a one-off case. This is going to happen over and over and over because it's we just know that you're going to end up with where you're going to be introducing sheker into the equation. So even though in any particular case I'm not worried, since it's going to be replicated many, many times, I don't allow it.
So why would that not apply to Sony in a way in general, non-relative?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if that was that would be, I mean, then that small chashash should exist.
Yeah.
And on a system-wide basis, that's good. Good question.
We always take chances, though. Like, we can't know for certain when they're going to lie versus not. Like, that's the concern. Why do we care if they're going to lie if we know we could just 100% tell? The thing is, we can't always 100% tell if a person's lying, but if it's 99 point whatever, then we accept it. So here, you're going to have all these people who are you're going to have more liars coming in. So as a whole, it's going to corrupt our system.
As a whole, okay, and therefore, okay, so I'll move to my second answer. It might be a good question, I'm not sure. The second answer is that sometimes it's not really a problem on an individual basis right now, once you have the rule that Krovim aren't allowed. So then we're not really saying we don't trust them because the Cheskas of them. And therefore, all of them are believed. That's not sufficient. But what the system would become if the Torah allowed it would be lead to sheker. Meaning, if you allowed Krovim to testify against each other, or you know, about each other, against each other, whatever it is, so then what would happen? It would be much more common. And then people would, whenever they get angry with the Krovim, they would do it. Or when they really feel you know, love the Krovim, they would do it. It would become a systemic phenomenon. It would become something that would happen much more frequently, and it would be a big chashash, and it would lead to lies. But like, once you just outlaw Krovim, it doesn't become that. It doesn't happen. Like, sometimes the allowing of the phenomenon, it's a dynamic process. Sometimes allowing the phenomenon itself changes how the phenomenon expresses itself. So once the Torah outlaws Krovim, you don't end up having the problem. And even when these Krovim come, I don't necessarily assume that they're not telling the truth. I just can't allow it. But if I allowed it, then what would the system become? Maybe there'd be a lot more Krovim testifying all the time, and there'd be a lot of Sheker introduced into the system. Okay, so sometimes is the very allowing of the phenomenon changes how it expresses itself, and then it really would have been a problem. But the Torah ushered it because it didn't want it to get that way. But that doesn't mean that now what the Torah is saying is that there's really Sheker going on, and that they're Cheskas Ovim, and therefore I don't believe them, and therefore I don't have the right to extend it to regular Ovim. The Torah is not saying because of that bias. It's just saying Torah has this svara that if you allowed on a system-wide basis Krovim to testify, the system itself would become corrupt over time and in general. Okay, but once you outlaw Krovim, you don't end up having this problem. Okay, so there's different ways to try to explain. Like I said, that svara I think is getting. More philosophical of why the Torah did it, if the Torah really believes them. That's what I'm trying to give a sense to why the Torah would do that. I'm not sure. I have to hear Yaakov's question. If the first answer is not really good, is that Nam would repeat over and over. I'm not sure, but in any event, that there could be different reasons, different considerations why you would not want Krovim. What would happen if you allowed it? But so in the end of the day, it's Xeris Akasav that Krovim are possible, and there's nothing deeper halachically to say. It's not pausing a deeper halachic structure that the Cheskas Ovim undermines Eidus itself. Okay? And therefore, an Ohev really is Kasha for Eidus. So I'd like to take that idea and try to extend it here to this Rashi. Okay?
Wait, and then,
how exactly does that answer, does that second answer, answer Yaakov's question?
Oh, I mean, there's a difference. The fact that you let friends testify about each other is different than Krovim. Krovim is a different phenomenon. Everybody's got lots of relatives. You're around your relatives all the time, from youth to old age. It would become a much more widespread phenomenon of Sheker if Krovim really were allowed to testify. Do you know what I mean? Like, then they would know every time they got into a fight, they'd say, I'm going to go to Beis Din or whatever it is. And do you know what I mean? Like, it's not the same. The Krovim, even though Krovim and Ovim share the fact that they have in common that, like, friends and relatives, they have certain things in common, that there's, you know, feelings of affinity towards each other. But Krovim is it's just exists as a different phenomenon. It's you're around your krovim all the time, and you have you know, in a different way than you are by regular friends, and therefore you by allowing krovim you might end up with a different type of problem in the system than by allowing friends to testify. By allowing friends to testify, you know what I mean, like, okay, whatever. But by allowing krovim, if it was kosher, then what would happen would be a different a breakdown of the system, as opposed to by friends testifying, the system itself can sustain that. It doesn't break down because of that. So what the system would become if you allowed krovim is different. It would be a radical change in the, you know, the nemanus of the system of Eidos than just by allowing friends to testify in situations where it comes up.
Even though they would be biased also.
Everybody's biased, but just because somebody's biased doesn't mean that so long as they're not nogei b'davar in a halachic sense, just because they have oev, that they have feelings of affinity towards somebody, that itself doesn't make us believe that they're lying. We have a cheskes kashrus, but you got to like appreciate what would happen if on a system-wide basis, if krovim were allowed to testify against each other. Like, what would be the consequences of that kind of a system? And you could think it through and see, you know, but there is a difference between friends and family, and how common it is, and the nature of the feelings and things like that, and, you know, what would happen. The point being that sometimes the Torah will have a gzeiras hakasav for other considerations than this particular thing has an intrinsic problem. This particular thing, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with krovim testifying. It's just that if you allowed it, the system itself wouldn't be good. It would be a breakdown in the system itself. I'll give you another example. For example, let's say women are pasul eidos, right? So why women pasul eidos? It's not because you don't believe them, because a woman, when you just need an eid echad, and isha is neman, she is nemanos, you trust her, right? But what would be the problem if women had to testify? So you could say, but look, it's ultimately gzeiras hakasav, women are pasul eidos. But now you want to understand why. Well, what would the system look like if women were to testify? Okay, they'd be chayiv, they'd have to come down to Beis Din, it would be, you know, it's like similar partakes to mitzvah seishas man grama. It's like you have to kind of get a picture in your mind of like, how would that change the system of Eidos? How would that change the system of social life in Judaism? If women were kasher Eidim and they were obligated to testify in certain situations and they were going to come down and things like that. So halachically, it's exerced because of an Isha's possible psula Eidos. Okay, but the reason why Torah did it is not because we don't trust her, but the reason Torah did it is because of the problems that you would introduce on a system-wide basis, if women were kosher le'edim and they were obligated to testify. What we know, there are other, that has nafkaminas, there's other implications on the system of life that Torah is trying to produce, and the Torah has to make a decision and basically create a psul edus for an isha. But the psul, the gzeiras hakasav is that an isha is psula. It's not telling you that a woman is not believed, in which case you wouldn't believe her even when it's eid achad, you don't need official edus. Right, and whenever you need eid echad, a woman is believed. Rather, it's just telling you in the system of eidos, there's certain psulim, it's like a systematic rules that exclude certain categories of people because the system wouldn't work properly if you allow them. But not that in any particular case necessarily there's a problem with the testimony. There are two different types of gzeiras hakasav. That's the Rambam's point. Two different types of gzeiras hakasav. One where it's telling you a particular reason, the other where it's just a psul, and you got to kind of like use, in a sense, philosophy to figure out why the Torah do it. Okay. So what I'd like to say for this Rashi in the Eidos Shi'atiyah Chalazimo is, I guess to try and make it less extreme here, is that, look, it is a psul in the Eidos itself. The Eidos itself is no good. As opposed to saying, like we were saying before, that the Eidos is good, you just can't act on it. Maybe you could say like the Eidos of Krovim, where really the Eidos is possible, but there's two types of psulim. There's just a psul of Eidos Yetiach HaLazimo, and then there's a psul like by, let's say by Rasha, where the very Eidos itself is not believable. It's the Eidos intrinsically is corrupt. And that's, you know, as opposed to where the Eidos is fine, but there's a psul from gzeiras hakasav. Okay, maybe that's like the better way to say it. So it's lo shmei edus. It's not a good edus because of the gzeiras hakasuf. The edus yet yachalazimo is not edus. Okay, but it doesn't mean that like the edus intrinsically, internally is no good to the point where I don't know what happened, right? So when krovim come and testify, do I not know what happened? We know what happened. But the psul and the edus means that, what does it mean, the psul and the edus and lo shmei edus? It means that this edus can't be accepted by Beis Din in order to act upon. I'm kind of trying to harmonize the way I said originally with this way. Is there's two types of psul and edus. And let's call it an intrinsic psul and an extrinsic psul. Okay? The intrinsic psul means the whole edus itself is garbage. It's no good, right? It's basically a rasha gives a testimony. I don't believe a rasha. He's a liar. The whole thing is puzzle. Okay? And Meriki Vegas is in a sense learning that if I don't have the check of Yechal Hazimo, that there could be consequences, then the edus is garbage and I don't trust it and the whole thing's worthless. Okay, that's like an intrinsic psul. The edus itself is corrupt internally because it doesn't have the requisite nemanas. Either a liar is giving it or there's no consequences for the people doing it. Then the edus intrinsically is no good. And then who's to say that the trefa killed somebody? But then there's an extrinsic psul where it's just exeris akasav, where really the edus internally has no problem. I don't really question the nemanas of the people saying it. Just because there's no real consequences that they wouldn't be killed, that doesn't mean I don't believe it. It's just to say that the Torah created gzeiras hakasuv, that this edus is possible for extrinsic reasons. Why? Because in general, if we were to allow edus, if we were to allow edus where there was no consequences to the people, then you're just going to get a corrupt system. Then you're going to, it encourages the illegal activity of edus sheker. You know, if Edish Yeti Yechalazima was allowed, so then there would be these professional fake Edim who would testify in these cases and they would get away with it and they would really destroy the system. And, you know, it would be, you know, hire these two Edim and there's no consequences to them. What's the difference? They're only going to testify in cases where there's no consequences and there really would become a corrupt system. You know, now, why does that not exist? Why can't I just call up Edim Sheker for Edish Yeti Yechalazima? The reason why you don't see that problem is because it doesn't work. Once it doesn't work, of course, nobody's going to make a business like that. But if we allowed Edus Shiat Yechalazimo to be good, then ultimately the system would become corrupt over time and it would become a problem. But now that the Torah doesn't allow it, when I have Edus Shiat Yechalazimo, what do I say? I don't say the Edus is not believable intrinsically. It's like the Krovim. Intrinsically, it's fine. Nothing intrinsically wrong with it. It's just there's an extrinsic Xeris Akasav and Apsul not to really accept it, not to makabal that edus, and not to act based upon it. Okay? Same idea. I'm basically trying to borrow the idea. Yeah.
Question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Wouldn't that then produce an opposite, I guess, like injustice, I guess, of the trefa getting off?
Yes, yes. So it's true. You end up with not a perfect world because in the particular case, there is an injustice that I have good edus intrinsically that I'm not going to act upon, I'm not going to use. But that's like I said, the world is messy. And in order to prevent the system from breaking down on a broad scale, you have to be able to, you know, certain cases, you're not going to be able to execute mishpah properly. But, you know, but that's better than just saying edus yet yachlazimo is good because, you know, maybe to say it even a little bit sharper, you know, maybe. I'm not sure if I want to say it this way, but another way to say it is that Edesh Yet Yechalazimo is good because we don't believe it. Because we don't believe it, then people in general don't do it. And if you happen to get a case where just I testify by a guy, turns out he's a trefa, and then there's no consequences for me, so then we don't say that you're intentionally doing it. It just worked out that way. But if you allowed it, then the phenomenon would spiral out of control to the point where I wouldn't trust it. It would undermine itself. Do you know what I mean? By allowing it, it would become more widespread and then it really wouldn't be credible. Do you know what I'm saying? Like sometimes by allowing the phenomenon, like we said, the phenomenon is dynamic. By allowing it, then, you know, Edus Sheker businesses spring up across the place and people are going to start abusing the system. And then really when Edus Yechalazimo comes into play, then they really are lying and I really don't trust them and it really would be Edus Sheker. But, you know, but because of the fact that in general we don't do it, because in a happenstance case, it comes out a quirk in the system, this guy's a trefa, and it's Edus Yechalazimo, I'm not saying that it's no good. There's no reason for me to be choshesh. I just know what happened. The whole thing was a quirk. But the bottom line is the Torah has to create a psul of Eidus Shi'atei Chalazima, because if it didn't, then it really would become a chashash of Eidus Shek and it really wouldn't work. That's a little bit of a sharper way to say it. I'm not sure you have to go that far, but you could. Where it's there's a certain idea of like self-defeating. It's a little bit like Kant's categorical imperative. You guys familiar with the idea that he says that like he tries to have like more certain activities, like lying. Lying is one of his examples, a classic example. If you want to say that an activity is immoral, if it's like irrational, like a rational agent wouldn't do it because it like undermines itself. You know, I mean, if every person always lied, like the only reason lying even works is because, I'm giving you a version of the Kant's category, but not necessarily how he presents it. But one way to look at it is that the only reason lying is an irrational activity. Why? Because if everybody lied whenever they wanted to, then the whole lying wouldn't work. Lying only works because people tell the truth in general. Then when you lie, you get away with it. But if everybody lied, then lying wouldn't work, and it would undermine the very activity of lying itself. So like the entire institution of lying is predicated on the fact that it's wrong to lie and people in general tell the truth. Then there's a sense in lying you'll accomplish something. But if everybody lied and there was no morality against lying, the very activity wouldn't make any sense. It undermine itself. Okay? So I'm using that kind of a move over here. Is that Eidus Shi'atei Chalazima, when we look at it now, it's fine. We believe them. We don't think they're lying. But if we would allow it and it wouldn't be a psul, then it would undermine itself. Then Eidus Shi'atei Chalazima really would be Eidus Sheker, because it would be more widespread and people would take advantage of it. It just comes out. Once the Torah apostled it, then Eidus Shi'atei Chalazima is in general no good. In a happenstance where it happens to work out, it wasn't consciously done. Why would you consciously do it? It doesn't work anyway. Or it just happens to be, you testify to that guy, turns out he's a trefa. So now we can't accept it because that's the system, it's possible. But it doesn't mean that we don't believe it in this case. Because the psul is not that whenever I have an edus with no consequence to aid them, I don't trust these guys. No, it's not true. It's just that I know if I allowed edus like that in general, I would have a problem. So it's exerts because of that it's possible, but not because that intrinsically the edus is no good. It's not an intrinsic psul, it's a psul extrinsic that the Torah places on the edus itself. Okay.
Do you view the case of Edom Zomin where they say where they can't provide the details of when and where? Because that seems like it should be more intrinsic. And the issue there isn't that there's no punishment, it's that it can't be disproven, right? So it's almost like that itself. Okay, that case of Edom Zomin is pretty intrinsic, it seems like.
Well, I mean, I would say the same thing there. I mean, just because a guy doesn't remember exactly where he was or what time it happened, you know? So, I mean, that doesn't mean he's lying. It's just that in general, if I allowed people to give testimony without saying where and when exactly how, I just know Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, but I don't know exactly remember where. It just lends itself to people giving edus where they can't be proven wrong and there's no consequence to them. And then you just would have a lot of edus sheker. You know, the fact that there's this check that if you caught lying and you weren't really there, you're going to suffer consequences, you know, prevents a lot of widespread Eidus Sheker. But I would say anything just because a guy forgot. Now, once that's the case, just because a guy forgot, do I say you're a liar? I don't believe you anymore. No, it's just now we can't accept it, because if we accept this, we're going to have to accept it all the time. If we accept it all the time, then it's going to become a problem. You know, but it doesn't mean that in this particular case, because you can't remember where it happened or when it happened, that we don't believe you. It's an extrinsic psul. It's a psul. I mean, that's the better way of saying it before. When I said originally, Rekiv Eger is saying like the edus is no good, but Rashi is saying that it's good edus, we just can't act on it. A better way to say it is instead of Rashi, and it's good bringing the idea of lo shmei edus Rashi, is that it is psul. There's a psul, but there's two types of psulim. There's psulim that emanate because internally, the Eidus just simply lacks credibility. And then there's a psul that's totally extrinsic, where the Torah just places a psul on the Eidus for no intrinsic reason. And why the Torah did that, that's really, in a certain sense, philosophy. That's the thing. You have to really appreciate what we're engaging in a certain sense, is the philosophy of the Gzeres HaKasav. Why the Torah did something like that. The Rambam and the Mishnah Torah is not going to do that. You're not going to find Reb Chaim or the Griz talking about that. You know? But you know, we do that. We want to understand, give a sense to why the Torah would do it. And you make it intuitive, but it's these types of, it's not as rigorous. It's a much more speculative endeavor, this kind of thing. You see, like, I'm already switching at one reason, two reasons, three reasons, I don't know, you know, circular reason. There's like three, you know, once you get into the speculative type of philosophy, there's multiple reasons you can be able to give. There's a difference between philosophy and defining halacha. The halacha is that it's an extrinsic psul. The Torah puts gzeiras hamelech. You don't know why. It just doesn't. But tamei mitzvos, there's an idea of tein lo tam, of showing the Torah is not just making an arbitrary rule of edus yetiachal zimo or krovim is pasal. The Torah pasaled it because, you know, if you try to take a broader view and see what would happen on a system-wide basis, if you allowed it, you could see why it wouldn't be good. That's like giving tamei mitzvos. Understand? But the halachic definition of the gzeiras hakasef is an extrinsic psul, or is there an intrinsic psul that it's no good? And the Rambam is rejecting by krovim the idea that it's an intrinsic psul by krovim, in which case we would be able to derive other cases that have that same type of intrinsic problem of oavim, and therefore the gzeiras hakasef is not telling us that, therefore we don't extend it to other cases. And I'm saying that I think that would be the question between Akiva, Egan, Rashi. Is edus yetech lazimo, is it intrinsically the edus is not credible and it just falls apart on its own? Or is it just a separate external gzeiras hakasef for the system, but internally there's nothing really wrong with edus yetech lazimo? Since that's the case, yeah, go ahead, Dove.
I was going to say, it seems like though, like you don't want to use a philosophy, but you do use it to answer, because at the end of the day, logically, you don't have edus, right? So Rabbi Akiva Eger would just say, I don't care, intrinsic, extrinsic, there's no edus here. Who knows what happened?
Right. Okay. Well, the way I'm trying to answer it is that the philosophy is why? Why would the Torah create an extrinsic psul? There's nothing wrong with it. Why did it do that? That's the philosophy. I'm not using that for the answer. What I'm going to use for the answer is the last step. And this is, do you buy this last step? But is that if intrinsically the edus falls apart, so then Akiva Eger is right. You just don't even have edus. You don't even know. You have no way of knowing that this happened. And then what's the sense of the Gemara saying that if a trefa kills Shimon? Well, you don't know a trefa killed Shimon. The whole thing's ridiculous. But if you say that, no, extrinsically, it's only an extrinsic psul. But intrinsically, we do have edus. The edus really is there. We know Reuven killed Shimon. It's just that the edus is pasul, and pasul means that Beis Din is not allowed to accept and act upon it. But we know, you know, we know that Reuven killed Shimon. It's just now we can't execute Mishpat. He's pater because of a gzeiras hakasev that this edus is pasul. What it means is not that the edus is no good intrinsically, but it just means that it's pasul for Beis Din to be makabel and act upon it. Then the Gemara is a good raya. The Gemara's raya is over here. Where is the Mishpat? You have good edus, but you basically said that we're not going to accept, we're not going to kill this guy. Because of whatever philosophical reasons you want to do it. But Mishpat Echad, every Rotzeach has to get the same punishment. But that's not true. There could be other considerations, and it could be that where it's EF sharp for whatever reason, because of the problem of Edish Yatiach Lazimo on a system-wide basis, the Torah is not going to allow you to execute Mishpat based upon this Edis. Okay, so that's a better way of saying what I was saying originally. That first step is that when you have an extrinsic psul, what you really mean is that the edus is there and the edus is good, but the extrinsic psul means Beis Din can't act upon it. That's what a psul of krovim means. It doesn't mean that there's no edus. It means that you can't act upon it. Edus yetiach lazimo doesn't mean there's no edus. It means that Beis Din can't be makabel, can't act upon it. But there was a good edus here, and we do know what happened. It's just we're not allowed to act upon it, because what would that do if we acted upon it? But it doesn't mean the edus is invalidated intrinsically. And therefore, that's the Gemara's raya. We know Reuven killed Shimon, but we can't do anything about it. It's impossible. Yafshar gzeir samach, don't do anything about it. I mishpat echad. Mishpat echad is fine, because it's the mishpat echad of when a person kills, we kill them, except where there's an impossibility of applying that din to this case. And the psul of edus yetech lazim, the extrinsic psul, is what makes it yafshar in this case. And you don't find the problem with mishpat echad.
Or is there?
Yes.
Is that different than a karov? Because a karov is possible, it's an eight, right?
Yeah, I don't think I'm trying to basically make a parallel, that there's no real difference.
Oh, really?
Between a karov and the edus yetech lazimo. I mean, the difference is a karov is a category of one of the ten psulim. Edus yetech lazimo is not a psul and a gavro. You know what I mean? The reason why there's an extrinsic psul here is not because of the gavro, it's because of the edus itself. You know what I mean? Like the yetech lazimo.
Right.
It's not going to be on the list of the 10 psula edus, the Rambam. Those are people.
I'm saying if a Karl Kaven gave edus, would it also be the same? Do you believe him? Or is it not even Shaya because you can't have any edus?
Could the Gemara have said, like, let's say Krovim come in and testify about that Reuven killed Shimon? Reuven's Krovim?
Yeah, is it not possible because you can't have edus to begin with? Because the Garba is possible.
So you're not
asking, I don't know if this matters. What?
No, I mean, I think you might be asking a good question. Could the Gemara have said here that if Krovim come in, Reuven's Krovim come in and testify that he killed Shimon? So now you're going to pater Reuven because of Edus of Krovim, right? So why the Gemara have to use the case of Trefa? Could have used the case of Krovim for the same reason, that even though we know Reuven killed Shimon, but nevertheless, it's a Gezeirah Sekasev that you don't kill Reuven. I mean, look, in theory, you know, I don't know if intrinsically, Eichanami, maybe the Gemara could have done that, Eichanami. Yeah, I just wonder if there is a difference. If, like, I don't know, it's a good question. If there's a difference between once you have a psul and the gavra, even if it's extrinsic, maybe you just don't really get very far. Right? Like, it's still, there's a difference. Like, you just don't let him testify even. You don't even hear his testimony here. But maybe by the guys, the kasher edim, you'll listen to the testimony. And it's like only from the content do you realize it's Eidus Yatia Chazim. Like, how do you know what they're going to testify about? It's only once they testify and say that this guy is a Trefa killed this guy, then we say, hold on a second, that's Yatia Chazim. But if Krovim come in, like, you're just not going to let them testify even. Like, why would you even hear them out? So it might be that's why the Gemara brings in this case. Even though conceptually they're both extrinsic Eidus, for the purpose of our Gemara, we want a case where you testified in front of Beis Din, and Beis Din knows what happened, and they still can't do anything about it. But if Reuven's Krovim came in and tried to testify, killed Shimon, we're just not even going to listen to them. They're not even going to get off the ground. Eidus Yatiach Lazimo, you let them testify, and then we say, hold on a second. This is what you testified about him. It's Yatiach Lazimo. We're not going to, that's possible. It's no good. We're not going to listen to it. Okay, a little bit extra complication, but, you know, if that was your question, Yaakov, I think that might be the answer. Okay, a little bit confusing, but do you guys hear the general approach of like the difference between an intrinsic psul versus extrinsic one? That's from the Rambam. That's like that key idea of the different two types of Xeris Akasos, where it's giving you a reason why the thing intrinsically is no good, or it's just positing a psul, and there's no deeper svara. There's no deeper svara halachically. Philosophically, you want to give an idea to make it sensible. But that's, in a sense, beyond the halacha. Where you could do it, you could do it. Where you can't. It doesn't bother you. Like I said, that's not something the Griz, the Reb Chaim, or the Gemara Rambam are going to do. They're not going to do it openly. The Rambam will do it, but in the Mor Nevuchim, he's not going to do it in the Mishnah Torah. That's one idea. And then the step is, I mean, I really just did at the end, but you have to think whether it really works out or not, is this idea that I'm trying to use to answer for Rashi. That since Eidus Yatiach Lazimo, according to Rashi, is only extrinsic, therefore, once they testify, the Eidus really internally is fine. And the fact that we don't act on it because of the psul of Eidus Yatiach Lazimo, which is extrinsic, lets the Gemara say, I have a case where I know Reuven did it and I still can't execute that mishpat because of Eidus Yatiach Lazimo. Here's a case where a guy's pater legamri, even though we know he did it. And you don't have a problem. Mishpat echad, similarly, if a blind guy knocks out somebody else's eye, I know he did it, but I still can't take out his eye because it's just impossible, and I don't say it's a violation of Mishpat Echad. Okay, there's really interesting that last point of the application, that because Eidus Yatiach Lazimo is extrinsic, that answer to Kivager's question, that's like another step. You know, you have to think through whether that step fully makes sense. I think it does, but you know, you have to see if that, you know, I went quicker on it, but it is itself a separate conceptual point that has to be justified, you know.
Does there end up with like a real halachic basis to that edus? Like, let's say Adam Zomim, the trefa. Like, if Adam Zomim do come and they want to be Zomim the person, do we listen to them? You know, like, because we're saying like we know the guy killed him, but is that halachic knowing, or is there more to it, or just like we think we know because we trust the guy? You know, is it a halachic?
Yeah, I don't think. I think halachically there's no real difference in this case. By the, I don't think so. I mean, but the nafkamina, the case of the Rambam, was could you extend that to something else? You know what I mean? To Ovim. That would be to other sonim or Ovim in general. That would be the nafkamina, how you conceptualize the halacha. And I don't know, maybe here there is like another nafkamina. There's one nafkamina is, can you prove, you know, the Shaklat Tire, the Gemara? It's not a beautiful nafkamina, but can you prove the case of the, you know, Ayin Tachas Ayin Mamish from that? But I don't think in general, in a particular case, whether it's possible because intrinsically or extrinsically, either way, this is no good. I'm not sure it really matters. It's more like what ideas you can derive from that. Other halachas can you derive from that? Or, you know, or does it teach you something about Mishpat Echad? But once it's possible, this is possible. I don't think it matters.
You say the Nafkamina is like Joe's case from yesterday about where the guy, the Adam, don't know that he's a Trefa? And then, according, if you say that it's just an intrinsic thing, then it wouldn't apply here because they're Neman. But if you say that it's Gzeres Kasev, then it would still apply.
yeah, I mean that conceptually that would be a nafkamina. It's true. It's like it's just that there's just like no way that's really a nafkamina. Do you know what I mean? Like there's just no way even Ricky Vega would say. Because, you know, because halacha can't work that way. Because how do you really know he didn't know? Maybe he did know and you just don't know he knew. Maybe he knew he was a trefa. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like halacha can't work by, well, we know that you didn't know and therefore we believe you. But, you know, I just think halacha, you can't make a system that way. But, like, conceptually, yeah, that would be enough for me. That would be, I'm not sure if there's any real value in coming up with a theoretical enough for me. Yes, it's a funny idea. But yeah, conceptually, that'd be a nafkamina. But I think practically, it's not a real nafkamina. Because I think in the end of the day, you're not going to ever accept Eidus Yetiach al Azimo. I think. Like I said, I have in the back of my mind a Gemara I remember doing. And I almost think it's like in Vava Kama, like the Kufs, on the Beis or something, where I just remember there was like this universal Svara about Eidus Yetiach al Azimo. I just have that. You know, I just thought about during the Shir, just talking about before earlier. And I kind of know where it is on the page, and I just don't remember what the Gemara was about or what the Svara was. It's just, I feel like there's like a Svara I once gave there. It was like a very fundamental question, and it's relevant. And I know where it is, but it's, I'm not really sure what Masechta is. Maybe afterwards I'll look for it and see if it's relevant again. So I have a funny memory like that, like places on the pages. But I don't remember the idea, so it doesn't really help. But yeah, I mean, conceptually, there's, you know, other nafkaminas you can come up with, but I think on a, you don't need a nafkamina. We're just trying to answer Kivager's question. That's what's going on here.